It's good to see a lot of my old friends again. In the past 10 years, I've been located in Spokane, Washington, a beautiful part of the country. And I'm going to report today on a project that has been going on for the last over 10 years, known as the Center of Occupational Health and Education. I have no financial relationships to discuss. Okay. There we go. A lot of this presentation is going to be found in the article that's coming out in the Medical Care volume December, I believe. It is downloadable right now off the web. The authors are the original, for the most part, are the original architects of what has now become the Center of Occupational Health and Education program in Washington State. And for you, chiropractic colleagues, you'll see Bob Mutz's name there. Bob has a very significant impact on this. Out of this report, you can see that the program results show that the patients that start their care and follow their care through providers that are part of the Center of Occupational Health and Education are going to be less likely to be off work after 1 year, and that the reduction in disability days is about 20% for costs of over $500 per claim. With the back pain, the reduction in disability days is closer to 30%. The injured workers that are treated by providers who adopt these occupational health best practices, and trust me, I'm going to go over them here in a second, they had 57% fewer disability days compared to the patients who were treated by providers who did not adopt at least one of the best practices. So this whole story started over 10 years ago when, in the state of Washington, this author found that the time loss duration for these various musculoskeletal conditions was pretty high, even beyond the first 3 months. The idea was, can we improve on these values by applying better resources, better solutions, better strategies in those first 12 weeks? And you can see that in our state, carpal tunnel was the highest contributor to protracted time loss. Back and neck came in second. So what we did in this project is focus on the first 12 weeks in the first set of the occupational health best practices, because we wanted that curve to not only move left, but also move down. And we were able to accomplish that. So the Center of Occupational Health and Education, or affectionately called COHE, is based on taking a set of occupational health best practices that had been around in the literature for a number of years, and making that determining which ones were priority by using focus groups and Delphi methods with experts in healthcare, also people from the industry, employers and even labor unions. So they came up with a set of best practices, but they wanted to get them applied within the community structure, community of healthcare, rather than through a managed care type of a scenario. And key to it was this concept of care coordination. So we have a set of health services coordinators that act as provider extenders to do that care coordination. It's also a pay for performance, where the enhanced fees are paid as a part of the fee-for-service system for doing the best practices, and the provider doesn't have to wait months or a year, such as other pay-for-performance systems. Plus, we always have an ongoing education program that's not necessarily didactic. It's more academic detailing directed to the clinics and the hospitals' point of care. And we also created an information technology solution. The COHI started after that managed care pilot in the 90s. There's one in Western Washington, south of Seattle, that opened in 2002. Ours opened a year later. And in 2005, we expanded from our first three counties into 16 counties. Two smaller COHIs, which are now called institutional COHIs, exist at the Everett Clinic, which is a multidisciplinary clinic in north of Seattle, and Harborview Medical Center, which is a teaching hospital for the University of Washington. Both of those opened in 2007. This is a geographic relationship of the four COHIs. Eastern Washington most closely relates to the Spokane Hospital referral area as defined by the Dartmouth Atlas. And as of last week, we're right about 1,135 providers, and I will show you a breakdown of those, including 34 hospital emergency departments, everything from the rural through the critical access to a level two trauma hospital in Spokane. The stratification of the providers, you'll see that we have emergency departments all the way down to non-surgical specialists, and I rank order these by their relative claim volume that they see. Very importantly, the emergency departments and urgent care clinics see the patients one time. They have a set of best practices that we expect them to follow on that one visit. Occupational medicine clinics are very rare in our part of the country. We have five board-certified OCMed docs in all of Eastern Washington. Combining family medicine, community health clinics, and chiropractors, about half of the providers are the ones that are doing the majority of the follow-up care, and we want to apply the other of the best practices. So, over the years, we've been able to achieve critical mass. In those 16 counties in eastern Washington, if an injured worker gets hurt on the job, there's about a 74% chance now that they're going to start their claim with a COHI provider. That means that it's going to start with that first best practice, second best practice, and so forth. Very busy slide, but what I want to highlight for you is this is a representation going left to right of the first 12 weeks and the tasks that we expect to see done at the various locations. The BPs are the best practices. You can see that under the new claim, you have an ambulatory clinic on top and an emergency room on the bottom. We also have created job aids to refine their workflows. Very important. If you're going to implement best practice with providers, you want to improve their workflows. You don't want to clog it up with more hassle factor. And then the other thing is there's enhanced reimbursement. Modest reimbursement for doing paperwork, for making a phone call above and beyond the E&M code. First visit example is probably about an extra $112 on top of the other services. And then we also provide decision support, guess what, conditions, low back pain, fractures, and carpal tunnel. So the best practices that we had employed in the beginning, complete the original report of accident, which is done in the doctor's office, and the doctor is the one that completes the work relatedness decisions and the time loss decisions and things like that. And we want that paperwork returned back to the agency or the self-insured employer within two business days of the initial visit. Prior to COHI, it took anywhere from 7 to 21 days for that to happen. And right now, the benchmark is 80%, but right now we're closer to 95%. Phone call to the employer when it's known that the injured worker can't go back to their job of injury. We don't ask the hospitals to do that, but we do ask the follow-up providers to do that. And that's happening close to a benchmark, especially with occupational medicine and some of the primary care clinics. Others don't find the time to do that. We also developed a form special for this project, and quite honestly, when I was in Texas, the TWIC 73 form, which is a return to work form that became a standard form statewide, I brought that with me when I went to Spokane, and we brought employers, and we brought labor people and providers in the room, and we took all kinds of return to work forms, cut them up, cut and paste, with the objective of creating one page to complete by the doc that gives the physical capacity needs, all the information that the employer needs to get Johnny back on the job, light duty, and we did that. That's the activity prescription form. The agency took it from us and made it statewide, and that one form replaced five other forms they used to send a provider. So reduction in hassle factor is the other currency that we've enjoyed in this project. The fourth best practice is if an injured worker is still off the job at 4 weeks, or if they've had a light duty return to work that failed, we want the provider to complete what's called a 4-week assessment for the barriers to return to work, 4-3-item checklist, and we want that to be then used by those health services coordinators. Health services coordinators are kind of a hybrid between a voc rehab person and a case manager, so it's kind of a mutt, but that mutt is virtual to the providers in that big geography we have, and they have 2 hours to return a call or a concern to the employer, the provider, the injured worker, to move that claim along. We measure the provider's performance on this on how accessible they make themselves when a health services coordinator calls them, or how much they initiate that call to make sure that they can help resolve some issues. The information tracking system that we created is a web-based solution that we designed at our company from the ground up, and it's made available to all of the essential end users, obviously with the appropriate permissions so that we don't violate HIPAA. But the whole thing is to get the information to the people that need it when they need it in a form they can use it. And that creates real-time information about return to work especially. This is what it looks like up close, and you can see we have red area, yellow area, green area based on priority, usually because something wasn't done, like a form completed, or some other adjudication issue that happened to pop up. Our system gets downloads every night from the state agency with their claim information. We create these workflows, these job aids, to help the facilities. These are not targeted to the doc. If you target a job aid to a doc, you're making a very crucial error, because they're not the ones that get the work done. It's the support staff. It's the registration admitting people. It's even the billing people. So when we orient staff, yes, we want the provider there, but we want everybody else that's part of that workflow, anybody that's going to be discussing something with a patient or dealing with form management. And we highlight everything about that best practice, including where the forms go, what the reimbursement is, et cetera. So just focusing mostly on the Eastern Washington COE, again, which is 16 rural counties, we were able to enjoy all of these outcomes, including the one where providers that participate are going to be highly satisfied with their experience. Prior to COHE, our state had problems getting providers, especially specialists, because they hated L&I, they hated the workers' comp, they hated the hassles, et cetera. So we were able to turn that around. The disability effects have been well documented. For every case that starts with a COHE provider, we have a 1 in 3 chance that one's not going to be going to a compensable time loss. And then 35% less likely at 360 days. We also showed that after 1 year, there was about a $591 savings, both on medical and disability costs. And of that, only 125 could be attributed to the provider education or selection. Everything else is attributed to those best practice activities. The longer-term effects, 46% less compensable cases at 2 years with $1,300 savings, 40% of it medical and 60% disability. We also found that providers that became those higher adopters had a better effect as well. I previously reported that, but looking at all claims, you can see that the higher adopters had duration of time loss that was less than half of those that didn't adopt. And then just looking at the compensable claims, we're also making a dramatic difference, thus the solution of a lot of that savings. So just that last year, our office that has 8 FTEs that work in it processed nearly 20,000 claims And we're responsible for the about $16.5 million savings that goes back not only to the agency, but to the employer, and the providers get paid enhanced fees. The other costs we haven't been able to ascertain, but they're found in these measures where provider or claims that are initiated and followed through COHE have less protests, less reopenings, less use of attorneys, pension rates, et cetera, huge sources of expenditure. Our state legislature did approve our program to go from a pilot project to a full program. And what they did in one bill of the reform was to create a managed provider network handled by the agency, not by an insurance company or a third party. The other thing our state has done, and no other jurisdiction has done it, I don't think, is that it gives our agency the ability to define patient harm in the course of treating injured workers and then remove providers from treating them. The other thing is we're going to make COHE statewide so that by the end of 2015, 100% of our state workforce will have access to COHEs. The other thing that's going on, we had those initial five best practices. Now we've got nine more coming. Bob Moots, our good colleague and friend, is very much involved in all of these, creating metrics, completing processes, implementation plans, on a new set of quality indicators. Based on a very important paper that won the ISLS prize-winning award a couple of years ago, Judy Turner was the principal investigator, that chronic disability syndrome can be predicted based on the presence of some of these things when looked at in the first 4 weeks of care. So based on this, we're moving into where risk factors are identified. There's an active coordination of care into fear avoidance and recovery expectations, a supervised graded exercise program, activity coaching rather than just shake and bake PT, coordinated care with specific vocational goals, and then the health services coordinators that work for me will follow a claim now for the full year rather than 12 months, and they're going to be very, very instrumental in perioperative assessment for return to work when appropriate after surgery. I invite you to visit our website, gocoe.com. You'll see a lot of the historical documents in there and some of the forms that I talked about, and be willing to take questions. One other thing as I finish, all of the lessons that we learned in this COHE experience over 8 years was the basis of the proposal that we put forth to the Office of the National Coordinator for the Beacon Grant. And we decided we were going to apply the health services coordination or the care coordination model combined with an information technology piece, apply it to a chronic disease, and that is adult type 2 diabetes, in that geographic area plus northern Idaho. My colleague and partner in the care coordination piece of that is Jennifer Pallello. Jen, you can wave your hand. We are working diligently on that. More providers, more hospitals and communities, and it's an exciting project. Thank you.